If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Republicans continue to beat the drum against an immigration reform bill that passed the Senate last month.
If this bill were to pass, wages would go down, unemployment would go up.
Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the leading critics of the bill, appeared today at a rally at the U.S. Capitol.
It's a hammer blow to American families. This is a hammer blow to working families who are hurting in today's job market.
The event was organized by the Black American Leadership Alliance, which believes the bill will make life harder for low-skilled African-American workers. Expressions of interest from 80 countries around the world has forced the IRS to order a six-month delay for implementing the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Stopping offshore tax evasion is a global issue, and to date, the Department of Treasury has arranged agreements with England, Denmark, Mexico, Ireland, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Norway, and Germany to address the issue. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Hello?
Joanne?
Yeah.
Hey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm
here. Okay, good. All right, sorry about that. And
that's
let's pull up Don here. Don, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, hey, I appreciate both of you being on the show. Refugee resettlement, you know, that's part of the immigration thing, but that's not something we normally think about when we think about illegal immigration or even the immigration bill. But refugee resettlement, that affects all of us as well. So let's start with you, Don. Refugees in Tennessee. Can you just give us a little background on the refugee system situation in Tennessee?
Sure. Well, the refugee program, as you know, is a federal program run by the U.S. State Department about involving as well Department of Homeland Security and Department of Health and Human Services. And the refugee program that we have today is a product of the 1980 Refugee Bill. And as far as Tennessee is concerned, Tennessee is about a middling state, meaning it's getting an average number of refugees per year as compared to other states. I think it's running about 1,250 a year, somewhere in that range. Most of them are settling in the Middle Tennessee area. And Middle Tennessee, in fact, Nashville itself takes more than New York City, takes many more than Washington, D.C., and which is, by the way, where the refugee resettlement contractors reside. And so I don't know if you want like the whole history of how it started or... Basically, you know, America has always been a welcoming country for refugees and for asylum seekers, but it changed fundamentally when it went from a program that involved sacrifice and charity, was run by true charities that practicing sacrificial, you know, acts of charity, to a federal contractor system, basically where the contractors were made money on it and were incentivized to shorten their involvement as short as possible with the refugee, so that now, for instance, their involvement with settling with the refugee is running somewhere around 2 to 3 months, and that's simply not adequate to you, there's just no hope of assimilation or you know, any of the things that we would want to improve.
Well, yeah, let me ask you this. How, are they vetted in any way, the refugees? I mean, you know, you said there's only 3 months from the time they get here. What's the vetting process?
Well, that's another aspect, too, because whereas previously the U.S. had a lot to say over which refugees got in, now about 95% are coming through the U.N. So the U.N. Selects the refugee for placement into the U.S. program. By the way, the U.S. resettles 2 to 3 times as many refugees as the rest of the industrialized world combined. The U.N. Forwards them to the U.S., and they are vetted by Department of Homeland Security, but it's very hard to get meaningful documents. Basically, it's just a matter of checking documents and checking fingerprints and trying to figure out if this person really is the person that he says he is. And it's just not possible to thoroughly vet an individual from some of the countries that the refugees are now coming from.
And did you say that the number of refugees coming to Tennessee is greater than what we have in D.C.?
Oh, yes, much greater.
Then how do we compare to the other states?
We come in about middle. I need to pull something up here real quick. There are some states, this is another irony, a state like Delaware, one of the sponsors of the original refugee resettlement program is Joe Biden. Delaware takes almost no refugees. Nashville itself takes more refugees than the entire state of New Jersey. This is looking at data over the last 5 years. It takes more refugees. Nashville itself takes more refugees than about 30 states, including states like New York, New Jersey, and some of the larger northeastern states. But Washington, D.C. takes practically no refugees. I think Washington in the last 5 years took about 200 refugees.
Well, talking about an unfunded mandate, huh? Go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah, well, I just want to jump in here for a second. You know, Wyoming doesn't even list a refugee coordinator in their state. Wyoming hasn't taken refugees for years and years and years. So they're not even listed on the Office of Refugee Resettlement website anymore.
So you mean it's optional? You don't actually have a state does not have to participate in this if they don't want to.
Yeah, I mean that has always been my position that this program is not mandatory. And in fact, when you look back on the funding history and kind of the way the federal government tried to entice states to essentially agree to take refugees was with money. And it is an unfunded mandate. Well, it's not a mandate, but it's really a cost shift because that funding has basically evaporated.
Wow. And so here we are paying out whatever, and we'll get to that here in a minute, but we don't actually have to do that, as you understand it.
Right. As I understand it, it is not mandatory. And, in fact, Tennessee got out of the business of refugee resettlement during the Bredesen administration under the premise, if you will, that it was a way to reduce the size and cost to the state government, because there is definitely a cost to the state government. And under the Bredesen administration, with that understanding, it was privatized, if you will, and given over to Catholic Charities to run to the state. And Don, I know, has spoken to this in the past as to the changes that occurred in Tennessee with regard to the number of refugees once Catholic Charities took over.
And how did Catholic Charities take this over? I mean, how did they come into the picture?
Well, Catholic Charities, the main, first of all, there's one thing that people really have a hard time getting their heads around, and that is that these are private, they function as private contractors, no different from Lockheed Martin building an airplane. And the main contractor, it happens to be U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, USCCB. And they work through affiliates, Catholic Charities, about 350 affiliate offices around the country that actually implement the program. And it's a profit center for them. That's one of the things that people, I think, have a hard time understanding.
Yeah, and we pay the cost. Hey, I'm going to have to take a quick reading break, and then when I get finished, we're going to take we've got a couple callers on the line. The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the Internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TradAm, as we call our home. Traditionalamericanmovement.com is a place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be part of the conservative revolution, all on traditionalamericanmovement.com. That's www.traditionalamericanmovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TradAm is a liberal-free website, and that makes it a great website. As I mentioned, we have a caller on the line here. Who do we have? Who's the caller here? Hello, can you hear me?
I came on, and my name is Terry from Kansas City.
You have a question?
No, I was just invited to the call, and I'm just listening in.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, glad to have you.
Thank you.
Hey, Don,
Kurt,
do you remember... Oh, sorry.
Kurt, do
Don,
you have anything for us?
Yeah, I'm here, but someone else is trying to say something there, Dave.
Okay, we'll get back to you here in a second.
Don, do you remember what the revenue was for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops? I think it was last year's total in terms of the revenue that was generated from
right.
the refugee resettlement program.
Yeah, it was over $71 million. And about 97% of that comes from contracts and fees that they collect, contracts and grants. Yeah, about 97%. But they collected about $71 million. They generate about $71 million in revenue.
So what does this cost the federal government?
Well, if you ask the State Department what it's costing, they'll say it's about $1.2 billion a year. But the biggest factor in the cost is a factor which they happen to be excluding from that cost. The biggest factor is the welfare load because, just to give you an idea, in the last 5 years of the group that arrived in the last 5 years, more than 50%, probably about 60%, are on Medicaid. their welfare is eligible for welfare within 30 days of arrival.
30 days?
Yeah, right away, basically right away, for every single welfare program out there on the same basis as a U.S. citizen. So the result is, in a group that arrived in the last 5 years, about 30% are in public housing, about 60% on food stamps, about 60% in Medicaid, probably even higher because they don't include youth in that, and various other programs. That cost is completely excluded from official government costs. If you were to include that cost, the annual bill would be easily $10 to $20 billion a year.
And that's just the federal cost, because the
right.
other cost that the other cost that's not accounted for and never appears in any report are the state incurred costs. There's a state portion, there's a state cost of state Medicaid and ELL instruction, which are two probably of the biggest cost factors in states, but that is not acknowledged for purposes of determining what the real cost of the program is. And I think the other important cost factor that should be acknowledged is when the federal government appropriates for this program, they appropriate to a dollar amount versus what happens at the state level, because at the state level, whatever costs are incurred are just open-ended.
Now, does the state... Okay, you said Catholic Charities took over for Tennessee. The governor of Tennessee a while back decided, hey, this is, we don't need to do this anymore, can't afford to do it. They're still not saving any money, even though they're not actually administrating it. But with Catholic Charities, did the state ever say, hey, Catholic Charities, we want you to step in and do this? Or how did that happen? Did they just step up on their own and the federal government just worked directly with them?
Well, no, actually, and the history of it is a little bit murky, but really, by Catholic Charities' own account, when the state gave notice that they were no longer going to serve the program and administrate the federal program in Tennessee, Catholic Charities applied directly to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement, to be appointed as the state designee, and what that means is to be the recipient of the federal funds to then further disperse the federal funding. And then subsequent to that, that was in late 2008, as I recall, and then about a year and a half later, they applied back to the Office of Refugee Resettlement to be designated as what they call a Wilson Fish program, which is a little bit different model of implementing the refugee resettlement program. So it really happened as between the federal government and Catholic Charities. The state was sort of out of the picture.
You're listening to Inside Tennessee. This is Dave Vance, your host. We have Joanne Bregman and Don Gratton with us. We're talking about refugee resettlement. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Okay, you mentioned a minute ago that the impact in terms of cost of the state, but you mentioned also something about ELS. Can you go into a little bit of detail what some of the impacts
sure.
are of this program on the state?
Yeah, and I really think that this is the crux of the heart of the matter as from a state perspective, because there is a really significant federal cost shift to the states, which, in my opinion, Congress is not authorized to shift the costs for their programs to the states absent the state's express consent to participate in that federal program. So
it's a Tenth Amendment issue.
Absolutely. And the way the federal government is going about it now is they're using an NGO, a non-governmental organization, which actually sort of functions like one, to implement their program. And what I say, if you can't do it through the front door, you shouldn't be able to do it through the back door. But when you look back at when Don said the hallmark date really is that 1980 Refugee Act, and at that point in time, when that federal law was passed, the federal government was providing 36 months of support for refugees in terms of covering the cost of health care and cash assistance, welfare. So, and 2 years after the law was passed, so in 1982, they reduced that amount of the federal support, they reduced it to only 18 months. So they cut that support directly in half. And actually, when the in 1980, when the law was passed, they were also reimbursing at 100% all of the costs incurred by the state for purposes of Medicaid, welfare. So any state cost, because there's a state cost component to that as well, states were being reimbursed for that. So then in 1982, that was cut back, 18 months of support for refugees, and they reduced the amount that they were reimbursing states. In 1988, a couple years later, the federal government reduced the amount again to 12 months of support. And then in 1991, they reduced it to 8 months of support, which is where it stays now. However, what is also significant is that by 1990, the federal government had completely eliminated reimbursement to the states to the state cost of Medicaid, SSI, and welfare. So the state's on its own. And again, the cost of education for refugee students in ELL, the old term was ESL, English as a Second Language, now it's called ELL, English Language Learners. The state is on its own, and it's not only states, there's a local cost to that as well. Local school districts pay for that as well as the state.
Wow, that's a lot of money. And how come we haven't heard more about this before?
Well, Dave, you know, that I can't necessarily answer, but I can tell you, one answer I would give you is the refugee contractors all have lobbyists. In our state, you have the Catholic Public Policy Commission lobbies at our legislature. TURC, which is the Tennessee Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition, they lobby at the legislature. You have some law firms that assist them. I mean, those contractors, because they are very, very vested financially in the program, and we had a GAO report issued in 2012 that confirmed that these refugee contractors make their money per capita. So for every refugee they bring in, that's how they get paid. So they have a built-in incentive to keep those numbers high, and I think Don had some data at one point that showed when Catholic Charities took the program over from the state of Tennessee, the numbers went up pretty significantly in Tennessee. But I want to give you some real-time numbers on the ELL, because I really believe that that's a place that we really should be looking at, because the costs are so significant, certainly in some of your larger urban areas. So I pulled out some figures from Metro Nashville Schools, and I looked at I was only able to get numbers from them, and that's one of the other problems, is very, very poor tracking. The refugee resettlement agencies have very, very little requirements on tracking data. The state doesn't have access to the data at this point. So We're left to try to piece things together.
So the state doesn't have any oversight.
No,
they effectively gave that up. When they surrendered the so-called state refugee coordinator to Catholic Charities, that was the one and only input that they had into the process. And now they don't even have that. So, it's the contractors are the ones who decide where to distribute refugees. That's another thing, too. They meet regularly and decide where to place people. And as Joanne was saying, after the contractor took over the state refugee function, the numbers went up for Tennessee, even though at the same time at the national level, the numbers had gone down. So,
yeah, I mean, and really, you have to realize it is, as Don said before, it is there are federal contractors just like Lockheed. It is, I call it bidding for bodies, because it's an RFP process. It's a competitive process, and in fact, when I try to get copies of these bids for resettlement, you know, I was told that these are proprietary documents. I've had a FOIA request pending now for close to 6 months because they compete against each other, you know, for the numbers. It's really an
understanding. Let me jump in here just a second. They're proprietary, but you are paying double as an American citizen and one from Tennessee, because you're paying the federal taxes that fund this. And then since we're from Tennessee, we also pay again.
Right, because we fund part of TennCare and any of the state-level charities. Another kind of almost humorous thing, too, is they compete on metrics. So they will say, well, Last year, 70% of our refugees were self-sufficient within 90 days. That's something you'll hear, and the press will repeat over and over and over again. Well, in the official definition of self-sufficiency, according to Department of Health and Human Services, when it relates to refugees, you can be on every single welfare program there is at the same time, except for TANF, which is cash temporary assistance for needy families. You can be on food stamps, in public housing, on Medicaid, every single welfare program except for temporary assistance for needy families, and still be considered officially self-sufficient. So it's a
meaningless concept. Self-sufficiency means nothing, essentially.
Means nothing.
Right.
Nothing in this context.
And when you look at the housing
caller
program.
On the line. Need to go to a caller real quick.
Sure.
Hello, who do we have here? Hello? You with us, caller? Okay. Let's try Kurt.
Okay. You know, when you look at how the program operates, and of course all of this is documented, the way that when the refugee resettlement contractors bring people to the state of Tennessee, for example, the first thing they do is they determine, are they eligible for TennCare? And if they are, that's where they go. They get signed up for TennCare. If they're not eligible for TennCare, then they draw down the federal money for 8 months of support. But, you know, I'd like to just for a second go back to some real numbers just to give you a sense of the education component. And I only have numbers for a couple of years here, but I was able to find for Metro Nashville Schools in the 2011 school year, they reported having 573 refugee students total, and they served 524 of them. So for that year, the cost for the ELL services just for those refugee students was $26 million. In the 2012
wow.
school year, there were 582 total because, you know, you have rollover. This is a cumulative, you know, year to year, it's cumulative. They served 504 in 2012. And the cost went up to just under $29 million. The cost
Good
for
Lord.
ELL services just for the refugee students goes up every single year. And a real interesting note that I found in the budget, in the 2012 school year, there was about almost about $1.2 million in the budget outside of the total. That included, they added positions for Kurdish and Somali translation specialists and parent
outreach
translators.
So yeah. We're not spending enough money as it is. Hey, I've got a couple callers on the line, and we're getting close to a break, so I want to take a couple calls real quick. Hello?
Hello.
What do we have here?
Hey, Dave. This is John in Union City.
Hey, John. How you doing?
All right. I've not called into your show before. I understand that you guys are talking about the resettlement issue and the immigration issue. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we're talking about refugee resettlement right now. We'll be talking immigration a little later on.
Okay, and I think Dr. Swain's going to be on your show?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, I guess the only thing I think we need to be very careful about this so-called resettlement because I think it's a Trojan horse, just like the immigration, any immigration reform is. And I'm probably not saying anything a lot of your listeners haven't already considered, but, you know, the reason the system is quote-unquote broken is because we don't enforce the laws on the books. And because we elect people to public office, we don't have our national interest at heart. They would rather pander to this group, pander to that group, or vote based on influence rather than principle. So anyway, glad you're doing this, Dave. I understand you're doing a great job with it, and I wish you the best of luck with it.
Well, hey, thank you. Great guest is the key, and we have those tonight. I appreciate you calling in. John, Kurt, you've got something you want to add to this?
Well, yeah, kind of. I'm going to go at one indirectly here. Someone posted in the chat, Mike Gookin, you know Mike.
Yeah.
He posed the question here, who screens these refugees medically prior to their coming into Tennessee?
Believe it or not, there's almost no medical screening. If you have an active case of TB, what they do is they cure it or treat it, and then once they treated it, you're good to go. They don't even screen for things like HIV, even though large numbers now are coming from sub-Saharan Africa, and that's, you know, there's a lot of HIV down there.
Yeah, actually, and on that particular point, 2 years ago, there was a hearing held in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in Washington, and it was specifically looking at the refugee resettlement program in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And they
I hate to cut you off, but we're up against a hard break here, and we'll be back in just a minute. Thank you. You're listening to Inside Tennessee.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Our guests tonight are Joanne Brigman and Don Grattan. We're talking about the refugee resettlement program, especially as it impacts Tennessee. Let's see, where were we? We were talking
about the state cost. The state costs, and you know, Don mentioned the absence of screening for HIV, for example, and it was documented by the Public Health Department from Fort Wayne, Indiana, in 2010, for example, that those costs get passed on at the state and local level, because once people are diagnosed, since they come in unscreened for HIV, if they come in with HIV and have to be treated and have to be screened, and in fact, the recommendation has been made by the CDC that refugees coming in do get screened for HIV once they arrive. In fact, they also noted that they picked up a whole slew of latent TB cases in a particular ethnic population. They weren't screened pre-arrival, but when they got there, this was discovered, and again, the state had to pay for that. You know, interestingly, Larry Bartlett, who is the Director for Refugee Admissions for the U.S. State Department, just visited Fort Wayne, Indiana. This is where, in 2010, there was a whole hearing in Washington about the refugee program in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and all the problems that they were having were noted, the school problems, the health problems. And so he went back just this past April. You know, he thinks things are going great there. And he said, interestingly, among many other things, he said, you know, refugees come to the United States because they can't go home again. Well, right on the heels of that statement, it was announced that about 60,000 Somalis have now returned to Somalia because it's now a safer country and people can return to their homeland. But despite that, the U.S. so far this year has admitted just over 5,000 Somalis. So, you know, it certainly raises questions about the fact that the at the federal level, certainly, there's a very, my impression is, there's a very different dynamic in terms of the lobbying that's going on. Forget the fact that these are federal contractors who may be lobbying on the federal government's dime. And really, states are left to their own devices. And I think states like Tennessee certainly have a real good reason to take a hard look at this. And I think the starting place is to determine what does it cost the state. And, you know, to that end, there was a bill this year. Representative Womack sponsored it in the House, and Senator Ketron was sponsoring it in the Senate. It didn't get heard in the Senate this year, this last session. But it got sent to summer study in the House committee. And it was, I think, a surprise to everybody that there was a very vocal Republican on that committee that did not support the effort to really dissect the state cost on this program.
And why was he opposed to it?
You know, it's kind of left us scratching our heads. We couldn't understand that either. We don't know. It was not something he articulated to us. Certainly he ascribed some real malintended motive to this. And there was a lot of propaganda put out by the refugee advocates that this was an anti-refugee bill and, you know, stuff like that, when in fact it wasn't anything like that. That was a fiscal bill to determine what the cost was to the state. And the state certainly has a very, very strong 10th Amendment position on this and should. And certainly if the federal government is not going to do the job of vetting the program, then the state just can't wait for the federal government to get its act together on this.
Well, how does the state even plan a budget if they don't know what they're spending on this?
Exactly. That's all the bill asked. It was, how much is it costing us? How many people do you place in TIN care? And even to the statement, how many people do you place in TIN care, it was very hard to get an answer, and they refused to do that on any systematic basis.
Right.
That's, you know, I don't understand how any public official could not want to account for the money. I mean, that's one of the basic responsibilities they have as elected officials. You know, I think that the more people find out about this, not this program, what it's costing, the fact that we don't know what it's costing us in Tennessee, you know, that's something that should be, the phone should be ringing off the hook in Nashville over this one.
I'll tell you, you know, I saw a figure, I think it was a 2012 figure, for the state expenditure for ELL. Now, it's not segregated in terms of refugee students versus other students, but just the state cost, that's just the state component, was $47 million. Now, if the state is spending that kind of money, the state does have a vested interest in knowing how that money is being spent and where it's going. And the state certainly has an ability and a prerogative to set its spending priorities. So the place to start is to find out what it's costing.
718-305-7176. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. This show is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. We're talking about the issue of refugee resettlement in Tennessee. And, you know, one of the things that Tennessee prides itself on, you'll hear the legislators talk about how fiscally responsible they are. So we know now that they are either uninformed or they're not telling the truth, one of the two, when they brag about how fiscally responsible the state is.
Well, I think
if they're not even tracking this, you know.
Right.
I think, Dave, I think for many people, legislators included, some of this information is going to be brand new to them. It, you know, as you acknowledged before, refugee resettlement is a, I think, in the context of immigration, a relatively minor program just in terms of numbers, even though the numbers are significant. And there's just not a lot known about it. There's very little quantitative data that's been generated. The federal government, in fact, Don and I have talked about this quite a bit. The Office of Refugee Resettlement is supposed to submit a report to Congress every year on the cost of the program. They're behind a couple of years. I think the last report, I don't know, Don, I think it was 2011 or 2010. But even Congress, I think, has put this program on the back burner.
Right.
Now, you know, we have a senator, last time I looked, and I haven't checked recently, but I do know that 2 years ago, Senator Corker was on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that held the hearing on the refugee resettlement, on the portion of the refugee resettlement program. And there was a GAO report issued in 2012 addressing some of the concerns that were expressed during that hearing. So, you know, I think at the very least, it's incumbent on Tennesseans who are concerned about issues like this, fiscal responsibility, and knowing where the money is going, to start bringing it to the attention of their representatives in the state. Now, you know, once it's laid on their desk, if they ignore it, that's a different story. But certainly if they haven't been made aware about it, you know, we'll at least give them the opportunity to learn.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes here. The bill you mentioned a minute ago that didn't get through, it is, so you said it went to summer study, so we should
that
be seeing that bill.
That bill went to summer study, yes. Yes, we should be seeing that bill back, yes.
And so what the citizens of Tennessee need to do is make sure that bill does not die in summer study, and it
absolutely
should be one of the top priorities in 2014 when the General Assembly meets again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, I've got to take a quick break, and we've got a few minutes left, and hopefully we'll take a couple more calls. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationradio.org, you're a conservative. You love America and our Constitution just like we do. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from books to bumper stickers and patriotic T-shirts to flags. And your pipeline to that good stuff is right here at conservativenationradio.org. Just go to our website, conservativenationradio.org, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag and proudly display your love for America and a conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Real conservatism for real conservatives. And we're going to go to Kurt. You have a question,
yes,
Kurt?
I was wondering if the information, if they would be inclined to disclose the information, the name about who the Republican legislator was that was so in opposition to that refugee expense bill last year in the Senate. Now, is that something that you don't want to talk about?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of public record. You know, you could certainly watch the video, but you know, Representative Bill Sanderson was quite passionate in his opposition to the bill.
Yes. Well, my memory wasn't serving me properly there at that point in time, but you having said that now, I recall, yes, he definitely was. I wonder if both of you would consider addressing a particular issue on this. This is a theory of mine, and I think I've got some fairly sound stuff to back it up, but I think one of the underlying reasons, the driving motivation behind much of this refugee resettlement effort, as it were, and all the immigration issue for that matter, is to change the voter dynamics of the area. Tennessee has been a red state now for quite some time. Wonder if you two would care to address that issue? Whether am I wearing my tinfoil hat or what on this changing the voter dynamics of the area?
Hey, let me jump in here real quick. Hey, we've got about a minute left, and we're going to have to take this break, and then Carol Swain is going to be our next guest. So since we're probably going to run out of time, I just want to thank both of you for coming on, and we'd love to have you back. I think we could probably do a full hour or probably 2 hours with a lot of the information that you have. Having said that, I'll let one of you answer that question, and then we're going to have to take a hard break.
Don, I'm going to take a stab at that. You know, Kurt, whether it's deliberate or not, there will be some net effect. Certainly, I think the motivation on the part of the resettlement contractors, because they self-propagate. We've had some new agencies open in Nashville because there's money to be had, and it has sort of developed as a almost like refugee entrepreneurship. You figure out how to get federal money, boom, you've self-employed, and you get to employ your, you know. So I think there, it's more a net result of an activity that's motivated really by get the federal money, you know, and live off the federal government. So, but the net effect may very well be what you're suggesting.
And some of these people that are working these positions now, they came here as refugees, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes, they did. Yes, they
and
did.
Many of the there's about 450 agencies that are involved in this directly. Many of them are mostly staffed by refugees.
Wow.
So it's a huge racket. It's a huge international network, really.
Yeah, it's an industry. It is pure and simple an industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the citizens of Tennessee aren't even getting the benefit of a job out of this.
No. And one thing, of course, we don't have time to get into is the whole issue of secondary migration, which is refugees who get resettled somewhere else and then come to Tennessee for work, you know, who go to work perhaps at Tyson's or in some of the other plants or, you know, we've got this big convention center down in Nashville, this brand-new convention center, which, you know, I'm sure has plenty of jobs for janitorial help and, you know, that kind of staff. Low-skilled jobs, unskilled jobs, really, where you don't have to speak English. And those are the jobs that are really sought after for refugee employment. You remember the case of the woman who threatened her coworkers at the, she was working for a subcontractor, you know, over near the Dell plant. Well, you know, it's driven by, you know, jobs. You come to Tennessee for jobs. So you've got that whole secondary migration impact as well, which, you know, we can talk
plus
about another time.
It's detonating entire flows of illegal immigration and legal immigration from the countries that the refugees are coming from, countries that never would have gotten a toehold into the immigration stream if it wasn't for the refugee program.
Yeah. And certainly set up a competitive workforce to our own unskilled labor force that currently lives in Tennessee. You know, there was a group out of Maine that actually went on record recently, refugees, who said, please don't bring any more refugees here because we can't even get jobs, and we don't really want more coming to compete with us.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're just about out of time. It's been great. You guys have given us some great information. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Joanne. And, hey, I definitely want to have you back. And we may just have to dedicate a whole show to this, get the word out, especially before the next session starts. Thanks again, and we'll be back. And right after the break, stay with us. We're going to have Carol Swain. Thank you very much. And we will definitely have you back. We'll have Carol Swain with us after the break. And just stay with us, please.
Thanks, Dave.
Hi, this is Frank Beard of ZZ Top for RAD. If you're out partying and drinking, and we all know that happens sometimes, please don't get behind the wheel. Give up the keys to a designated driver. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. This program is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. Our next guest is Professor Carol Swain from Vanderbilt. She'll hopefully be joining us here in just a minute. She is, I don't know where to even start on her bio. I believe she just popped up here. Ms. Swain?
Hello?
Professor
yes.
Swain?
Yes.
Hey, glad. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's great to have you.
It's my pleasure.
Just a few things here. You've appeared on the Hannity's Great American Panel. You've been on Lou Dobbs Tonight. Numerous radio shows, written numerous articles that have been featured in major newspapers. You were even – one of your books, a couple of your books have been cited by Supreme Court justices. And – it's not like you ever sat still, because you now have a new thing called Be the People, if I understand correctly. And, you know, you've been at Vanderbilt for a few years now.
Yes, I've been at Vanderbilt. At Vanderbilt for 14 years, and I taught at Princeton 10 years before I arrived here. And I was tenured at Princeton when I left there to come here.
Well, we greatly appreciate you being with us today. When we talked before, you mentioned that you got hired on at Vanderbilt and there was a little time in between there, and that the person that they hired might not be the exact same person that actually showed up for the job.
Yes.
Remember that conversation?
Yes, I do. And it has to do with the fact that I guess all Princeton professors think they're hot shot. And so I had been very successful at Princeton. I'd won 3 national prizes, and I, you know, was a hot commodity. And Vanderbilt pursued me. And at that time, Vanderbilt did not have the statue. This was 1998 when they started pursuing me, and I accepted the job, and I came in 2000. But I had a Christian conversion experience between the time I accepted the job and when I actually arrived in Nashville. So my whole worldview changed after my conversion, and I would describe it as a Paul on the road to Damascus experience that stopped me in my tracks. And I know a lot of people use born again, you know, rather loosely to describe maybe even just getting baptized. But for me, born again was just a total conversion of my worldview and my sense of purpose in the world.
So the Carol Swain that actually showed up 2 years later was just a much better person than the Carol Swain that they hired.
I was a different person in the sense that for the first time, I would say that my life made sense to me. I was one of 12 children born and raised in rural poverty. And I was the only one that we all dropped out of school. I dropped out after completing the 8th grade. I started the 9th, and I dropped out, and I got married at 16. By the time I was 20, I had 3 small children. Every one of my siblings dropped out of school. No one finished high school, but I was the one that was able to get a high school equivalency, start at a community college, and get the first of 5 degrees. And I have always been blessed. When I was 16 and I was buying a house, and I
You're buying a house at 16?
Well, I was married, and my husband and I had used out his tax return check for the down payment. And at that time, there was a government program called FHA 235, and all you needed was $300. Now, this was the 70s, so $300 was more than it is now, but we had $300. We paid down, and I was buying a brand-new house that I watched them complete. And so my life has always been different from my siblings. And so I can say I was blessed, but I was not a devout believer until after I got tenure at Princeton and God put me on a journey. It was not straight to Christianity, but I sort of went through the New Age religions and Eastern religions because I was always a seeker. I always knew that there was something larger than me guiding my life, but I was not ready to say it was Jesus Christ or to talk about it in the Christian terms, but I knew that there was something much bigger than me. And after I got tenure at Princeton, and I looked at it, and I was making more money than I had ever earned in my life, and I had the money, I had the prizes, I had the recognition, I had everything that should have made a person happy according to the world, and I was miserable.
Just something still missing.
And so that's put me on a search that took me in a religious direction that culminated with the Christian conversion experience. And that experience, I don't want to go into the details of it, but I had a very powerful Paul on the road to Damascus experience, and I believe that my life is about something much bigger than me. And, you know, like I tell people, it's not just me, but our lives are not about us. Like if you're a Christian, your life is not about you and what's going to make you comfortable. It's about something much bigger than you. And I think that we would, our society would not be in the trouble it is now if more of us could see that God has blessed many of us, he's positioned us, he's given us resources that we cling to often, but it's really not about you. And I think that whether it's talents or resources, that there are expectations that God has of us, and it's the sooner we get over ourselves, the better.
Now, you started something recently called Be the People. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it's a half-hour talk show that deals with political, social, and cultural issues from a conservative perspective. And God has given me a vision of being like the Christian Oprah on secular TV. And you say, well, what does that look like? Well, I think Oprah was so successful because she brought whatever her latest interest was to the topics of the day. And so, you know, people that followed her, they followed her through many different things. I believe that my Judeo-Christian worldview can be applied to the secular issues of the day. And my show has been airing on the NBC affiliate locally. In Chattanooga, it was the ABC affiliate. We recently switched to Fox 61 to get a better time slot. So in Chattanooga now, we are on at 9 a.m. in the morning. And then in Union City in Obion County, we have a Monday 6:30 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Time slot, which is great. And the vision is for the show to go statewide and regionally and nationally. So it's a big vision. But I'm really trying to not just preach to the choir. And there may be some opportunities for me to air the show on some Christian television, but my call, I believe, is to the secular world. And it's not a Christian television show, but it's a conservative show that gives a viewpoint that's often not heard in the mainstream media. And what I try to do locally is that on the issues that are really important, I try to give people an opportunity to speak that probably will not get interviewed by our local media.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, we do have to expand the choir. I mean, that's something that we run into. I know the different Tea Party organizations and 912 organizations and all the conservatives. We have to expand the choir. And, you know, if you could – well, you're already on the networks, but getting you more exposure and letting more people know about it. I mean, that would be great for you to be the conservative Oprah. I think everybody would like to see that. We're up against a hard break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the immigration bill, because per our earlier discussions, you've got some concerns about it, as most of us do. So I appreciate you being with us, and just hold with us till after the break. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio, and we'll be right back.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is peace around?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. This show is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council of Tennessee. We have with us today Carol Swain, Professor Carol Swain from Vanderbilt, and she was just talking a little bit about her new programs that are airing in different places across the state. Professor Swain, we talked earlier on this show about the refugee resettlement issue, and I know me and you talked before about the immigration bill. You've got some serious concerns with the immigration bill. You want to talk about that a little bit, specifically the groups that wrote the bill? I think you had some concerns with.
I do, and I was fortunate enough today to listen to Mark Krikorian's address. He's the executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies. And they post a number of reports that if people want to know the facts, they can go there and, you know, become real informed. I am concerned that groups like La Raza La Raza, the Chamber of Commerce, there's just a slew of interest groups that have been actively involved in writing legislation, and the legislation that's come out of Congress has not been in the interest of the American public. And I am particularly concerned about the impact, not just on low-skill, low-wage workers. The Congressional Budget Office study, even though it said that legalizing the people that are here undocumented, and we always talk about the estimated 11 million, the truth of the matter is we don't know how many are here. It could be 30 million. But it said that it would increase the gross national product, GNP, would increase. But it also said that it would decrease the wages of the average American. It didn't say the poor American, the average American, for about 10 years, and it would increase unemployment. And if you look at the unemployment rates that we have now, for some groups, especially for people that have a high school education or less, and for African Americans, the rates are unacceptably high, and this legislation that's being that's passed the Senate, that's going through, will be going through the House soon, does not work to the advantage of the American worker, and it also doesn't solve the problem. The Congressional Budget Office report says that it would likely reduce illegal immigration by 25%. And they estimate that, you know, another 10 years later, we're going to have, 10 years down the road, we're going to have another 7 million people in the country who are undocumented. So if the whole reason we are reforming immigration is to legalize or the people who are here undocumented, the legislation might legalize that group, but it does nothing to correct the problem.
No, no, it sounds like it's just going to make it worse.
I think it's going to make it worse, and Mr. Krikorian pointed out today that it's just smoke and mirrors about the border security bill that was added. You know, Senator Corker worked on it along with another member of Congress, where they say that they're going to add like 20,000 more border security officers. He says it's not going to happen, and that a lot of what they're doing is just smoke and mirror tricks to make the American public think that they're really reforming immigration. What we have that's being rammed through Congress now is something that will benefit big business, and it's not always clear that it benefits immigrants, because our guest worker programs have had numerous problems, and they don't always work to the best interests of the immigrants, and there's nothing to stop the people when they come in on guest worker programs from deciding to stay, from starting families. Once they do that, you know, who's going to make them go home? Certainly not anyone in the current administration.
Well, that's part of the argument that the other side always uses. Well, you know, it's not the children's fault that they were brought here illegally, and, you know, we have to do the humane thing. We have to be fair. And we hear fair all the time, but, you know, is there anything in this legislation that's fair to the current American citizens? Is it fair to the people who were naturalized, who went through the right process, you know, whether they came from Mexico or Britain or wherever, and went through all the right hoops? There's nothing in this legislation that I've seen that sounds remotely fair to those people.
No, and the thing that gets me is I don't know how America became so broken, but we are a very broken country because we have members of Congress that pass legislation that's not in the interest of the American public. And no matter how you frame it, this bill is not in the interest of the American public. And political correctness prevents us, not me and not you, but prevents many people from speaking honestly about what's taking place in this country. And on this immigration bill, I think many of the churches have been so misguided because they hear, you know, social justice, and people know the terms to throw out to make it seem that you're being inhumane. When you talk about enforcement of laws, you know, we were supposed to be, or we are supposed to be, a nation of laws, but it doesn't look that way. And I believe that when we stopped enforcing our immigration laws, and we stopped decades ago, we've never really enforced them the way they should be enforced, you set the nation on a path that's like a slippery slope. And you see our president, you know, how the disregard that he's shown for various laws, and how the Constitution in many areas seems to mean nothing. That all goes back to us setting a precedent, in my opinion, of not respecting and honoring the rule of law, where we have a system for passing laws, and we, in the past, or the way it's supposed to work, we pass our laws, Congress passes our laws, the executive branch enforces the laws, and those laws are enforced until they're changed. And if you don't like the laws that we currently live under, we have a system for changing those laws. But once you start ignoring laws, then you put the nation on a course that's led to where we are right now, where the president picks and chooses which laws he's going to enforce, and you have situations like the case I've been talking about all day, the Zimmerman case, where the people don't like the verdict. The jury has decided they don't like the outcome, and so they want to try another way to get around the rule of the rule of law. There are people out there protesting. We're either a nation of laws or we're not.
Well, and this administration has pretty much been lawless from day one, but we didn't get here overnight. There's been a lot of – the bulk of our Constitution has been ignored for years now, and we've tolerated it. I think a lot of times we've tolerated it because way too many people didn't even realize it was being violated, and or They realized it, but maybe there was money involved, so it made it a little easier for them to turn their head. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We have Professor Carol Swain from Vanderbilt with us, and we are talking about the immigration bill. Love to, if you have a question, please call in. We'd love to hear from you. There are some groups that claim to be evangelical who are saying that, you know, it's the right, the Christian thing to do to pass the proposed legislation. I know that not all Christians and not all evangelicals feel that way. Do you think that what they're trying to push is those who favor this bill who are trying to use the Bible to support their position, do you think that's accurate?
Well, you know something, again, I think that a lot of Christians are just totally misguided. And they, some of our churches are talking about social justice, and we do care about justice. God cares about justice, but social justice is a Marxist concept. They don't know that. It sounds good. It came from the universities, but that's what they are espousing. And if you look at the biblical perspective on how to treat the strangers among us, you know, the Bible talks about not abusing strangers, but the strangers among the strangers that the Bible refers to had obligations too. And their first obligation was to obey the laws of the land. They even had to worship the same way as the Israelites. And in America, we start off with telling people basically that they don't have to obey the laws of the land, they don't have to assimilate. And because of our First Amendment, you know, we have many different religions, and if there's discrimination taking place, it's taking place against Christians, because I'm told by school teachers that several of our schools have prayer rooms for Muslims, yet Christians are not allowed to pray. That's seen as a First Amendment violation. And so I think that the Christians that are speaking out on the immigration issue and are being used by the media, that they are manipulating, if it's pastors, they're manipulating the congregation, and biblically there's no justification for them to be involved in this issue, because we have a situation where people have broken the law, and they're certainly not following, you know, they start off by not following the laws of the land. We should treat them humanely, but I believe the Bible perspective that God established nations, and he set the boundaries of those nations. And people have always immigrated and gone back and forth, you know, across lands. But there is a process. And as a nation state, we have a right to say what the rules are to enter and how you live once you enter a land. And it makes no sense to have so many people come to this country either illegally or legally, and then they try to turn it into the land that they left.
Yeah. Yeah, if you come here, you come to be part of our country, which means you have to obey our laws. And we seem to be the only country in the world that invites other people to come over here, and we will accommodate your beliefs, we'll accommodate your culture, and you can just basically disregard us altogether. I'm up against a hard break. We'll be back in just a couple seconds. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We have Professor Carol Swain. We'll be right back in just a minute. The call-in number is 718-305-7176. Our friendly local Republican spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy in Whitaker's Chambers, so what would you expect? Get your weekly dosage of old-age, old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and Hangar Flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. Join Delaware political veteran Christopher Manti every Friday right here on conservativenationradio.org for the Christopher Manti Show at its new time, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, for a fresh take on conservative thought, modern America, the threat of Sharia, and the weird, wild, wacky world of Washington, D.C., plus some heavy metal rock and roll thrown in for good measure. The Christopher Manti Show, which could readily be called eponymous, Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We have Professor Carol Swain from Vanderbilt with us, and we are talking about the immigration bill. The guest worker program, I think you mentioned that a few minutes ago, Professor Swain, that's another area that we're not really monitoring the way we should. They have them come over here. They're not monitored, just kind of like the student visa program where they come over, it expires, and they just stay indefinitely. Does this bill do anything for that?
Well, one of the problems, I think, with guest worker programs is that some of them bring in low-wage, low-skill workers, and it's not and I'm not talking about agricultural workers. I'm talking about people that work in restaurants, they work in hotels, they do yard work. They do many of the jobs that American citizens are doing, that large numbers of Americans are employed in. And there's no reason to say that we need any more low-skill labor in this country. Yet, pretty much, that's what some of the guest worker programs are doing. They're bringing in more people that, you know, that compete with our native workers. And with some of the guest worker programs, you know, there's more than one kind. There are several different ones. Some of them, you know, discourage, set up in such a way that it works against the native-born workers. And they may have conditions, work conditions for the immigrants that's not very favorable, where people end up paying an exorbitant amount of money to the middleman to come to the U.S., and it's almost like a form of slavery because they are not paid even minimum wage. And the person that brings them over, you know, has a lot of say about their working conditions. That's totally unacceptable. Those are things that really need to be worked out. And what I believe is, for one thing, the Senate bill, we hear that it's dead on arrival in once it reaches the House. Well, it should be dead on arrival, but we really have to monitor what's taking place in Congress. Because if we don't watch it closely, then another bill will be substituted that will be equally as bad. And this is not an issue where the Democrats are all, you know, they're the bad guys and the Republicans are all the good guys. It's you have to watch both political parties when it comes to immigration reform. Because with the Republicans, some of them, I think, have really been scared into believing that if they don't support amnesty, that Republicans will never get the Hispanic vote. Well, I'm here to tell you that if they do support amnesty and the people decide to become legalized and register to vote, they're likely to be Democrats, and so they're just growing the ranks of the Democrats. And there are other Republicans that are supporting the bill because they like cheap labor. It's not in the interest of the rest of us, you know, to have a lot of cheap labor, especially if that cheap labor competes with American workers. And if that cheap labor is so poor that they qualify for social welfare programs, some people may benefit, but the public as a whole loses because they're going to be paying for the education of the children. They're going to be paying, you know, for subsidized housing in some cases. So it's not going to be a win-win.
No. We're going to subsidize cheap labor for those who want to hire them, and at the same time we're going to be subsidizing the Democrat Party because you're right. That's absolutely right. Most of them are going to vote Democrat. We're going to go to a caller real quick. Hello, caller. Who do we have on the line?
You got Bob down here in Fayetteville. How you doing?
All right. How about you?
Good. Listen, I just want to tell Professor Swain I've enjoyed hearing her testimony. I've been very touched by her, and I don't want to tell her and let her know that we serve a mighty God. And if it's in her plan to go national with her program, he will certainly see that happen, okay? And it's really been a blessing to me to hear her, and I totally agree that the Republican parties will get not one more Hispanic voter if they vote on the Hispanic bill and for amnesty. And one, I guess right now what we're understanding is about 75% of the people, as John McCain says, they're in the shadows, are going to remain in the shadows after this bill passes, if it does pass.
Is that correct? I agree that, you know, there's nothing that will make those people, like if I were reform and immigration, I would put in that a stipulation that every undocumented person has 1 year, all right, we can say 2 years, to register their presence. And if they are found in this country unregistered, they would be immediately deported and not allowed to ever enter this country, because if they pass immigration reform, they have to set up a strong incentive system to make everyone come out of the shadows and be candid, because we can't have a country where there's so many people that no one knows who they are or where they are, and they walk around boastfully in some cases and give interviews and boast about the fact that they're undocumented. How can this be in a nation of laws?
I totally agree with you, and I think you're right. One thing we got to do is handle this thing from a very biblical standpoint, and God would not want us to just uproot them and kick them out, but you're right, to give that timeline of a year or 2 years to come out and make themselves known and work themselves toward assimilating into our society, learning our language, and becoming an American citizen. Are they at that point in time, let themselves be known, and we will buy them tickets to go back to Mexico.
I thank you for your comment, and I certainly agree with you, and I just wish more people would have the courage to speak and not allow themselves to be intimidated.
Yeah, I do too, and I've enjoyed you, and you've been a real blessing to me tonight, okay? And I got one other question for you. What radio stations are you on at 9 o'clock?
I'm not on another radio station at 9 o'clock.
I thought you mentioned something about Chattanooga.
Oh, that's a television. If you go to my website, I have a TV show called BeThePeopleTV.com is the website.
Give me that one more time.
TV.
Let me write it down.
Instead of We the People,
it's
Be the People, all one word, TV.com. And it's a half-hour television show that airs weekly in parts of Tennessee. But you can go to the YouTube and watch some of the previous episodes. And
okay.
My vision is to build my network market by market.
Mm-hmm.
And so in communities where, like even in your community, if I could find five advertisers and I would be able to talk with some stations about bringing the TV show there. And
mm-hmm.
for people that are in Tennessee, you know, I really need the support of conservatives. I need advertisers, because I have to pay for the airtime. I have to pay for the production. And some people say, well, maybe you'll get picked up by a network. I don't want to get picked up by a network. If you get picked up by a network, they will tell you the topics, and
yeah,
they will dictate too much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well, I'm going to write all this information down, and I've got and everything. And do you have a phone number?
There's contact information on my website, and
all right,
so
I'll
my
do
telephone
that,
number as well as my email.
All right, I appreciate that, and may God bless you, okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, caller. We're going to take another call real quick. Kurt, would you like to say something on this?
Yes. Just one thing, Dave. I appreciate that gentleman so much that just called in, but I've been sitting here and just absorbing everything as best I can that Dr. Swain has said. It has done me so much good to hear her openly express her position and her beliefs as a Christian, and to state her feelings and opinions on public policy and politics. I've been sitting here getting a feel good on because of things that Dr. Swain has said. She's just doing a fantastic job, and God bless you, Dr. Swain. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Well, and you know what? That's one thing we need to do. I mean, there's a lot of us who can communicate with people all across the state, and we need to make sure that we go to your site and get that information and get it out to everybody, because, you know, it would be great to see you during prime time at the state level on shows here in Tennessee, because
well,
we need that. We need your voice.
Today I was blessed by being able to be on CNN this morning and PBS, the NewsHour, this afternoon, giving a different perspective on the Zimmerman trial. And I do believe that God has called me to media. And my shows, like, again, you know, the show is a lot of it's informational and geared towards a conservative audience. It's on mainstream TV, on secular TV. But we pray before each show starts. I pray with my guests and the ones that are working on the show. We do that before we tape each show. And when I'm on television or when I'm giving an interview like I am right now, I have a prayer group that's out there praying for me. And so I take all of this very, very seriously, and I don't believe it's about me. I believe I have been called, you know, to speak the things that need to be said at this hour. And I'm very concerned about our nation and the direction it's in, and it's much bigger than immigration. There's a whole host of issues, and I believe that if we don't turn it around now, we'll run out of opportunities.
Well, I believe you're right, and I don't think we have a whole lot of time left on so many fronts. You know, the immigration issue, just the financial situation, and all this goes back. It all goes back to the moral issues. That's what I believe, anyway.
And you know,
we've got a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It's so interesting to me that some people would say I'm an economic conservative and a fiscal conservative, so they don't care about the social issues, but they're intertwined. There's no way that you can deal with one without dealing with the other, because you may be a fiscal conservative, but what's happening on the social side is costing all of us money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You look at the whole welfare, you look at the out-of-wedlock births, you look at all those things, and it all comes back to the moral issue. Morals, they come with a price tag. People might not want to think about it that way, but there is a price to pay, not only the moral portion of it, but there's a financial portion. 718-305-7176. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We're with Professor Carol Swain of Vanderbilt, and we're talking immigration. Professor Swain, we've got just a few minutes left before our time is up, and I want to just give you, you've talked about it a little bit, but I just kind of want to give you the last 3 or 4 minutes here before we go to the break to talk a little bit about what you wanted to promote in terms of your shows.
Well, first of all, I want the audience to know that one reason we're losing the cultural war in America is that we don't have our own media outlets. And so Inside Tennessee and shows that are conservative, but, you know, they're not mean-spirited. We're not yelling at people. We're not calling people names. We're trying to educate the public about the issues that really matter, that people need to support political candidates, give money to campaigns and vote, but also you need to support conservative media and make sure that your voice is being heard. And I think that that is part of us being able to turn everything around, is that we need not just my show, Be the People, and not just Inside Tennessee, but we need our own shows and networks that go beyond Fox News. Fox News is a corporation. It's about making money. Some of us are being called, and we're doing things out in the world because of the values and principles. We're doing it, you know, to help educate people. We're doing it for something that's much larger. And I think that people should be able to discern the difference. And if God has blessed you with resources, I think you should pray and decide whether or not you're doing everything that you could be doing to help the conservatives that have been called, just like people are called to run for office. Some of us are called to be voices in America.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, that has been the missing piece. In Tennessee and nationwide is having a voice. You know, a lot of people thought Fox was the voice, and it's better than the others, but it doesn't really do it. And at the state, you need it at the state level too. I mean, we have so many things at the state level that need to be addressed, because the bottom line is if the state does not stand up to the federal government and force them to follow the Constitution, they're not going to do it. Well, that's going to take the people of the state forcing our elected representatives to stand up for the Constitution. One of the biggest problems we have is when it comes to media, whether you're talking radio, whether you're talking television, certainly print, you know, we're not winning that war. We do a great job of preaching to the choir, but, you know, I don't want to just preach to the choir. We need to expand the choir, and that's, you know, something we have to do a better job of. Professor Swain, I cannot thank you enough for agreeing to come on the show. I'd love to have you back. I wish I had a soundbite of your endorsement a few minutes ago. Maybe we could talk about that. But we'll definitely spread the word about your shows, and just thank you for all you do, and I hope that you'll come back sometime soon.
I certainly will, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you.
All right, bye.
Take care. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Dave Nance. That's Nance, not Vance. And he's going to talk a little bit about the Tennessee Constitution Party. So don't go away. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Okay. So just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay. Then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. This show is brought to you by the Tennessee Actions Council. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We're going to get to our next guest here in just a second. Dave Nance is going to talk to us a little bit about the Constitution Party. But first, ConservativeNationRadio.org is proud to be associated with the most effective identity security and credit monitoring service there is, LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. And now, Conservative Nation Radio is proud to announce that when you join LifeLock, you get the first 30 days free and 10% off the regular price from then on, only through ConservativeNationRadio.org. To protect your identity with LifeLock, go to ConservativeNationRadio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's ConservativeNationRadio.org, and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee, Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Dave Nance, are you with us?
I'm with you. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Appreciate you coming on the show. Now, Dave is a jack of all trades. You know, last week we had him on talking about the fair tax. And, of course, Dave has been involved with the Tea Party movement in Tennessee since day one, Gibson County Patriots, 8th District Tea Party Coalition. And he just didn't have quite enough on his plate. He found a little more room on his plate, so he decided to get involved in the Constitution Party. Is that pretty accurate, Dave?
That's pretty accurate. I guess I started... Dave, it goes back, close to the first of the year. And, you know, a lot of us have spent a lot of time in Nashville at the Capitol trying to encourage our state legislators to stand up to the federal government against the federal overreach and against a lot of the unconstitutional federal mandates on state government, which rolls right on down the hill to us. And the inaction of this Republican supermajority that we've been a big part of making happen.
Super in number only.
Yeah, super in number only, exactly. They've been willing to do absolutely nothing. They fought us tooth and nail on every piece of legislation that we tried to push. And I just began to see that I was beating a dead horse with the Republican Party in Tennessee, and had given up on it at the national level a long time ago. But at the state level, I thought, maybe it's got hopes. But when I said I just can't support this anymore, I met with the state executive committee of the Constitution Party, and one of the first my first concern is if this party grows, what's to keep it from turning into exactly what the other two parties have turned into? And so
that's
I've
a good question.
Answer.
Very good question.
Well, it's what the other two parties are, and we can talk about that, is they're fundamentally flawed. And as you know, and most of us know, we do not have representative government. Our representatives represent their party's agenda, and their party's agenda is not in our best interest. And that's either party, because their party's agenda is power, is control. That power and control leads to bigger government, and that's either party. So, but anyway, to answer that question briefly, in the Constitution Party of Tennessee, all of the county chairs and all of the district directors will make up the state executive committee, and any member of the state executive committee can petition for a no-confidence vote on a legislator that we've elected. And
what would that take? I mean, is this no-confidence vote? Is that just somebody gets their nose bent out of shape and they decide, hey, you know, we want to call this guy out?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was meant to. Well, here's if they vote against the party platform or if they vote against the Constitution, you have to state why you're petitioning for a no-confidence vote. And then if 10% of the state executive committee sign the petition, then it goes to a vote of the state executive committee, and it takes two-thirds to approve a no-confidence vote. Now, that in itself doesn't do anything past that. But with three no-confidence vote during a legislator's term of office, he's removed from the party.
Yeah.
So
if he's still in office, he has the office, but he can no longer claim the party.
Exactly. And the odds are he's going to finish that term and be through, because the other two parties are not likely to accept him. And basically that's pretty much the end of his political ladder, you might say.
Right.
So that's the difference in the Constitution Party and the other two parties, is we have a platform that we will hold our elected accountable to, and the Constitution, of course. But
right.
We know that, you know, and going back to the fact that we do not have representative government, and you know that, I know that, we all know that. They represent the party agenda. They don't represent us.
We've seen that over and over again, especially in Tennessee.
We've seen it over and over, and it's across the country. It's not just Tennessee. But they have no interest. That's where their power comes from.
We do have some good ones. I mean, I don't want to make it sound as if there are none. I mean, you know, we do have Judd Matheny. We do have Joe Carr. We do have May Beavers. Dolores Gresham,
yeah,
and if I overlook anybody, that doesn't mean there aren't other good ones. But we do have some, but they're the minority, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I've Dolores Gresham has taken the wind out of my sails here lately, supporting Common Core. So, I mean, they're not going to be with you all the time, you know. And Mark
right,
Foti's
right.
Mark Foti's one you've missed, you know. Jim Somerville.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, there are a lot of good ones, but in percentage, it's not enough to be what we need the Republican Party to be in Tennessee. And in my terms, or you might say in my dad's terms, it's beating a dead horse.
Yeah, seems to be that way. Listen, Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio, the phone number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Please call in if you have a question or want to make a comment. Dave, do you think that some in the GOP are so blinded by loyalty to the party that they can't see any remedy that doesn't involve the party?
Yeah, of course they do. You know, people have been in the Republican Party for so long, and you even the ones, let's say in our county GOP meetings, there are people there that are, you know, diehard Republican. They have no idea how their elected vote on bills and what have you. If they've got an R by their name, they're wonderful. That's all they need to know, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess several other questions here I wanted to try to get to. Now, one of the big things about a third party, and I know you don't necessarily consider the Constitutional Party a third party. I've seen some of your material, but how do you respond to those that say a third party will only split the conservative vote, ensure that Democrats win? What's your response to that?
The conservative vote is already split, Dave. We've lost the last two presidential elections. We had John McCain and we had Mitt Romney, and we had millions of conservatives, conservative Republicans, conservative independents, who stayed home rather than go vote for a liberal like John McCain or Mitt Romney. They
just didn't have the stomach to do it. Yeah,
they just didn't have the stomach to do it.
Yeah, I understand. And now I want to make it clear. I know there are some people who believe that, you know, okay, you just have to stay in. It's not a matter so much of party loyalty. They just look at it and they say, hey, historically, third parties have either been irrelevant or at the most they've played spoiler. And so they're sincere in that belief. They're not just party hacks per se. Others are, I think, wed to, well, you know, if it's not the GOP doing it, then, you know, I don't want to be involved. But why is it you think things might be different now? Why is it you think there might be enough energy, enough interest, enough people with potential resources to make this thing work?
Well, because our country is absolutely coming unraveled. And as the economic situation gets worse and worse, which we know it will, you know, under the current policies of the Obama administration, I think things are different because it's just we live in different times. And if you think a third party can't come ahead and become a major player, tell it to the Whigs, you know.
Yeah, and you're not saying overnight. And, you know, you mentioned conventional wisdom. Well, conventional wisdom is we would be addressing President Romney right now. You know, conventional wisdom says that somebody like Obama couldn't have got elected the first time. So, you know, I don't know about conventional wisdom anymore. And to all the listeners out there, nothing I say should be construed as endorsing or going for or against any party, okay? And anything I say, I'm speaking on my own behalf. I'm not speaking as part of Inside Tennessee. I'm not speaking as part of Tennessee Action Council or Conservative Nation Radio. So just understand on this particular subject. Now, you mentioned how it'll be structured different, and we got to go to a break here in just a minute. But do you see the Constitution Party being able to play a role at the national level soon, or are you going to focus primarily on the state level initially? Real quick answer, and then we have to go to a quick break.
No, not at the national level. I don't think we'll have any seriously viable candidates at the national level yet. But, yes, we will be. I'm almost certain we will have candidates in the state, as state representative or state senator, at least one, maybe more, in 2014.
Great, great. Don't let the big liberal media fool you or anyone else. There's no war on women in the conservative movement, and we got proof right here every Tuesday night. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing comes to you at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, here on conservativenationradio.org. Listen up, then call in and be heard by real women who are real patriots. Incidentally, conservative guys are welcome at our very own D&B 2. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing. Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. And Dave, we've got a caller, and we're going to see what question he might have for you. Who do we have on the line here?
Mike Warner, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
How are you? Super, super. I just wanted to chime in there and let people know that we're having an organizational meeting for the party here in Liberty County, or excuse me, Montgomery County, in Clarksville. I'm getting a little tongue-tied here. But on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Montgomery County Library, we're having a Constitution Party organizational meeting, and we're going to start one right here.
Great, great. And, you know, if you win, you can call it the Liberty County.
Well, too much time for spent at Fort Stewart, I guess.
Gotcha, gotcha. Hey, appreciate you, Mike.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, Dave, what kind of response have you got so far? I know you've been at this a little while.
Well, we had great response. My first county to make an effort at organizing was my county. It was Gibson County. And at the organizational meeting, we had 48 people. The second meeting, we had 46 people. The next meeting, I wasn't able to attend, so I don't know. But those numbers are double what the Republican and Democrat parties have in their normal monthly meetings. But, you know, Dave, there's a point I'd like to make about the Republican Party and the history that brings us, that should get your attention. If you go back to FDR, beginning with FDR, there's 80 years of history. There's 7 Democrat administrations and there's 7 Republican administrations. Every one has grown government bigger and more intrusive than the one before. And it didn't matter if they were Democrats or Republicans. That includes Ronald Reagan's administration, as much as I loved him. When he left office, government was bigger than when he took office. So it is a natural tendency of government to grow that we're fighting. And the politicians, Democrat or Republicans, don't fight it because their power and control comes from bigger government.
Exactly. What they can take from us and give to other people to stay in power. They don't shrink government. Politicians are not in the business of shrinking government. And it's up to the citizens to hold them accountable and say, look, you know, we want you to follow the Constitution. We don't want you to take our money for X, Y, and Z. Now, part of the problem is way too many people out there, they want that government benefit, or they want other people's benefits taken, not necessarily their own benefit taken. And so there's some guilt there as well.
Oh, sure. You know, everybody has become addicted to the federal grants and the money and this money that does all these wonderful, mostly useless things for us. But, you know, it's, Dave, I was laughing. There was just an article, the city of Milan, Tennessee, just got a grant for $2.6 million to build a sizable safe room downtown. It's basically a storm shelter that kind of doubles as a city building, you know. And in the paper, the mayor said somebody else is willing to pay for this because it comes from the federal government. See, I mean, it's lost when they say, well, it comes from the federal government. It's free money.
So does the mayor of Milan not pay taxes? I'm just curious.
The mayor of Milan is a Republican. He's a former state representative. But to make a statement like that, the money... Hey, well, you and I know and realize, but it's amazing, and I'm not sure whether he really thinks that way or if he, you know, wants other people to think that way. But
yeah, he just didn't want him to think that it was their local tax is going to go up. Hey, I'm up against a break, and we'll be right back in just a second.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The call-in number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we're speaking to Dave Nance about the Constitution Party in Tennessee. And, Dave, we're going to go to a caller real quick, and we'll try to get to Kurt here in just a second. Caller, do you have a question? Hello? Hello? Guess not. Kurt, not to put you on the spot, but do you have anything to say?
I knew you were going to do that, Dave. And you are putting me on the spot, but that's okay. I don't mind. Now, listen, I've listened with a great deal of interest to everything that Dave has to say. And, you know, hey, we've been riding the rails together for a long time together, and we all know how the other one thinks, you know. You know where I am, you know why I'm there, and I'm going to leave it at that. All I can say is, Dave, best of luck to you in your endeavor down there in Gibson County, and to you, Dave Vance, just keep doing the good job you're doing with this radio show. We need to grow this thing and make it get a bigger listening audience for this. This is a good thing that you're doing here, okay?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Kurt. And, hey, and I want to clarify something. You know, there, like I said earlier, there are a lot of people who just it's not so much a party loyalty thing. They just happen to think that, you know, their belief is fix what you have. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of sincere people that believe that way. Others just happen to be fed up and want to try a different route. So not throwing any stones here. Dave, how many groups do you have currently in Tennessee? Do you know?
Well, I'm not sure. Initially, now just a few months ago, there were only two county groups. It was Washington and Monroe County, and they had been, I'm not sure how long they had been organized, but quite a little while, I think. And then a couple of us started working in the 7th and 8th District to organize groups, and since that time, we've got Humphreys County, Stewart County, Gibson County, Madison County. And there's other counties, Dixon County, Williamson County, and a few others that are targeted right now. In fact, meetings already organizational meetings already scheduled. So we're going to make every effort to grow this party fast, and it's not without strategy, Dave. You know, there is a concern. I mean, anybody, we don't want to work against. We're keeping our eye on the ball. And what's the ball? Constitutionally limited government is the ball. Now, we don't want to do anything to damage that direction. But yeah, we know.
We're not going to target – you wouldn't target a Judd Matheny. You wouldn't target a Mark Green or somebody like
not.
That. I mean,
of course
yeah.
not. If we had a race, let's say – somebody like Judd Mathaney or Judd Mathaney running for governor against Haslam, you think we'd throw a candidate? Of course not. You know, I mean, there's common sense. But if we've got, if there is a serious rhino running against a Democrat, and we think we have a candidate who can potentially win that race as a third candidate, absolutely we'll go for it. Because if you lose a rhino, if you trade a rhino for a Democrat, you hadn't lost a whole lot.
Not anymore. There's getting to be less and less difference.
Yeah, and some of them, I mean, there's Democrats in the state legislature that I would trade for some of the Republicans. I'm telling you, you know, I can name a few that are good men. You know, why are they Democrats? Don't know. Recently, there's a lot of Democrats that just simply run as Republicans because they know they have to win. Now, they didn't change. They've got the same mindset. And that's damaging. And that potentially is prevalent up in East Tennessee. That happens because we have open primaries.
Yep.
The Republicans refuse to close the primaries because they need the Democrats to get themselves renominated. But the open primaries are like inviting your enemy into your camp to help you select your general officers. You know?
Exactly. I'm going to try this caller again here, Dave. Let me interject and see if if we can pull him up. Caller, are you there? Can you hear me? No luck. Okay. And you know, you mentioned open primaries, Dave. Hey, there's nothing going to there will be nothing from stopping people in the Constitution Party voting in a Republican primary, will there?
No, absolutely not. We're going to vote. I mean, you know, we're politically oriented. All the members of the Constitution Party, for the most part, are very aware voters. And believe it or not, the majority of them are independent. Well, they are. Most of them are independents. They're not Republican transfers. They're people that for a long time just have a mistrust for both parties. And it's justifiable.
Yeah. Well, what's it now? There's something coming up in July concerning the Constitution Party.
Oh yeah,
correct. The bylaws or bylaws committee or something.
Well, it's not. It's an overall statewide meeting on Saturday, July the 27th. It's a statewide meeting of the Constitution Party, and any member of the Constitution Party in the state of Tennessee can go and vote, and there'll be election of officers. There'll be a vote on adopting revised bylaws and constitution. And these things are very positive because the new bylaws will facilitate the growth of the party in Tennessee. And, we're very excited about that. And I'll be going to that meeting as well as a lot of other people in the newly formed counties.
And that's in Dixon?
That's in Dixon on Saturday, July the 27th at the Renaissance Center. Starts at 8:15 in the morning. And if you want to join the Constitution Party, you can go to that meeting. There's a $30 fee to join the Constitution Party and vote. Anybody's welcome that's had enough of our two-party, one-party system.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The number is 718-305-7176. We have just a few minutes left here, so if you want to get a question into Dave, call us now. Go ahead, Dave. You started to say something. Sorry to cut you off.
There's another quick point that I'd like to make about the Republican Party and what has happened in Tennessee just recently. And some people may not realize that for the first time in 150 years, the Republican Party has got the control of the state government. They've got the governor's seat. They've got the House by supermajority. They've got the Senate by supermajority. And the very first thing they did was adopt a budget 14% bigger than the previous Democrat administration. Now, this is the party of smaller government, more fiscally responsible government. See, they don't do what they say. You know, the Republican Party is not what they say they are.
They talk a good talk, but they don't walk it. Now, that was 14% in the first year or 14% since they've been in power?
No, that was 14% in the first year.
Wow.
Whammo.
Wow.
Above the Bredesen administration. So, and it goes back to, like I said before, you know, the seven Republican presidential administrations all grew government. And the parties are no different from candidates. You can't pay any attention to what they say. You have to watch what they do. And if I were making a case in court that the Republican Party was a party of big government, I'd give this 80 years of evidence here and ask for summary judgment. It'd be over.
Well, Dave, hey, I appreciate you coming on. We are just about out of time. Thank you for being here, and we'll definitely have you back. Good luck on the 27th. Thank you for joining us today on Inside Tennessee, Conservative Nation Radio. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dickerson.